This is quite interesting in the Philippines. In the major production areas in China and Vietnam, in Southeast Asia, the powerhouses are really China and Vietnam. And before ASF, Philippines was top 10 in pork production. We had like almost 13 million pigs. But after ASF hit in 2019, I think right now we're less than 8 million. So the government is saying that they're recovering, they plan to recover 2 million a year until 2028. But ASF outbreaks have been continuous.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai. AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Mycotoxins were found in over 90% of feed sampled in 2025. Don't let mycotoxins impact your pig's health and performance. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/fumzyme. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. Vaccinova, formulate to your needs, custom-made vaccines. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at FortivaImpact.com.
Hello and welcome to the Swine It podcast. My name is Daniel Linhares and I'm going to be your host here today. We're going to talk about swine trends, challenges and nutritional strategies in the Philippines and Southeast Asia. And for that topic, we have here with us Dr. Ariel Carlos, who brings a rare mix here of high-level academic training, holding a PhD from University of Georgia, which we know it's a powerhouse in monogastric nutrition, and over 40 years of experience and boots of the ground experience in the Philippines, Bangladesh, and other Southeast Asian countries. And he provides consulting services on monogastric nutrition and management that will include swine, layers, and broilers. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ariel.
Hello, Daniel. How are you? I'm happy to be here. Hopefully this could be a productive talk between the two of us and your viewers as well.
Yeah, very, very excited to be here with you today. And to start the conversation, we start with the current status of the industry today, right? Because we understand that since 2019, thereabouts, African swine fever has been decimating herds, right? And as we speak today in 2026, the industry there is seeing a split recovery. We say that there will be some large or relatively large-scale commercial farms rebounding via high biosecurity standards, where some relatively smaller smallholders who still make up with about 70% or so of the Philippine inventory, they still struggle, right, with ASF. And so with ASF and the economic situation, and so that brings the question is, we've seen this massive shift in the swine map, the bigger farms and the backyard farmers. How does that has been changing over the last couple of years? And is the industry becoming more consolidated or what do you see there?
Yeah, this is quite interesting in the Philippines. In the major production areas in China and Vietnam, in Southeast Asia, the powerhouses are really China and Vietnam. And before ASF, Philippines was top 10 in pork production. We had like almost 13 million pigs. But after ASF hit in 2019, I think right now we're less than 8 million. So the government is saying that they're recovering, they plan to recover 2 million a year until 2028. But ASF outbreaks have been continuous. Because aside from China and Vietnam and the other Southeast Asian countries changing their way of producing pigs, we remain 70-30 And 70% backyard, still small scale, and 30% commercial, consolidated commercial. So the commercial really is where the breeding stock is. But the government keeps on repopulating the backyard because this is a big voting block. So politics always comes in. And instead of shifting it to smaller holders in the industry, they continue to repopulate this this segment, which has really failed a lot. So that's why the population, the local population, is still struggling. When I say population, it's the swine population. So we haven't been back to the 12-13 million pre-ASF, where China and Vietnam have even exceeded their pre-ASF populations already.
With a big rebound, right? Large investments there with big farms.
We've lost a lot, and we've come up with a lot. There's this big integrated operations dominating Asia that's now the biggest producer. So they were in the right time at the right place, and they dominate the large sector of the swine production area.
And you mentioned governmental kind of intervention. One of those things, as I understand, is government-led vaccine, ASF vaccine rollout. And so how is that being picked up by the our producers, both the 70% backyard and the 30% more integrated? Are both of those groups using? And do you see that being a help leading to a new permanent reality, or how do you see that?
Yeah, the Philippines is called the guinea pig of the ASF vaccine. You see, most of the vaccines that come from to the Philippines are from Vietnam. And the Vietnamese have produced it. They're not using it commercially. We've rolled it out on emergency use purposes, primarily for the backyard sector. For the commercial farms, the big commercial farms, we rely primarily on biosecurity and improved farming systems. So yes, for the backyard, it probably has impacted, but there are limited amounts of vaccine. There is, and this is common knowledge, there is a lot of smuggled vaccine also coming in that ends up in the backyard, and because the government is supporting the backyard producers, so this happens. That's the unfortunate score with the ASF vaccine. The large commercial farms that haven't used it are staying away from it because they will introduce the virus in their farms. So that's what they're afraid of until there is really a stable and reliable vaccine that is practical to use in the breeding herd, then probably that's where I see these large commercial farms vaccinating.
So the large farms are still trying to keep it negative, investing in biosecurity, while the backyard farms rely on the vaccine, right, to sustain productivity.
Yeah, and you know, the government has also announced some support for ASF struck in farms, but really when it's time to pay, these farmers do not get paid. So, you know, that's why ASF continues to spread, because the farmers, to recover some of their investments, they cull the herds and they sell it through third party viajeros. We call them viajeros as the main marketing channel for live pigs.
So we've been talking about ASF, but also would like to talk about beyond disease, right? There are some other things that influence cost of production. And in the case there, the Philippines going to be imported soybean meal, corn, squeezing margins. So how are the regional kind of geopolitical tensions or shipping disruptions currently affected feed to meat ratio for Philippine producers?
Of course, these geopolitical situations affect us because we import 100% of our proteins, which is primarily soybean meal. At some point, we were 80% reliant on local production of corn. But I don't think the commercial farmers or corn planters are making enough money. That's why production has fallen. Of course, with the ASF, there's a shift to the use of corn to the poultry segment. But we also import a lot of wheat. And because of the war in Ukraine, we've been devoid of Ukrainian wheat, which is more cost effective to us than the other wheat varieties from Australia and South America and the US and Canada. So we import some wheat depending on relative cost with corn. 100% almost is for protein is soybean meal, and then we use a lot of byproducts to supplement the feed, and some coconut oil, which is the main oil that we use in our diets. Feed cost has increased by around 30 to 50% since the last quarter of 2025. It remains high today in terms of dollars. Cost to produce now is around $2.50 up to $3, depending on what you look at. And selling prices can be $3 to maybe $3.50 per kilogram live. So the market is usually live pigs. So the profit margin and the disease continues to disrupt supply of local pork in the market. And the preference for pork is fresh chilled. It's not frozen. The government has lowered tariff rates for imported pork. Of course, from buying power, capacity to buy, they can sell it lower than commercial locally produced pork. This favors meat packers, meat processors. But really, the local Filipinos, they want fresh chilled pork coming from the wet markets, which is, of course, locally produced. This is a consequence of geopolitics, politics, political issues.
Talking more about industry challenges here, how do you advise your clients on the compliance versus cost trade-off, right, when thinking about the new environmental manure management regulations and the need for biosecurity? How do you balance that compliance versus cost?
When it's an election year, environmental compliance takes top priority to government officials. They're trying to lure voters to their side. So farmers are very strictly regulated for smell, for flies, and investments from, and all farms are private. So the farmers will have to invest more in terms of preventing, odor, pollution, and fly control. And this happened this year. Farms which were not being touched by these kinds of regulations now have all been regulated to some degree. So that's the major issue right now. And, people selling fly control products, ammonia control products have been flourishing. So that's one of the heaviest regulated. Of course, antibiotic use is still allowed in the Philippines, but we've reduced antibiotic consumption because we've been going to the US, Europe, and studying negative effects of antimicrobial and gut health, of course. So this is very important to us as well. But if we look at cost to produce and everybody else can use antibiotics, so we're still forced to use antibiotics at the farm level, at least for my network of consultancies. We've tried to reduce this both in poultry and swine. And we're seeing the benefits. Of course, we have to change management systems. It's not just pulling off antibiotics. It's really focusing on biosecurity and improving management systems in general to be successful.
First, just to kind of keep exploring these nutritional strategies and your byproducts, right? You mentioned the geopolitical complications and challenges, and so how do you balance there? What are some of the alternative products or byproducts that are available in the region, and how do you go by identifying these products and ensuring quality control and cost benefit for your clients?
You know, our feeds and livestock industry has survived by using these unconventional feedstuffs. We call our feed generally corn soy based, because our main grain is corn and our main protein source is soybean meal. But that makes up like 60-70% of the diet. The 30%, of course, will be your additives, and maybe 20% are byproducts. And these byproducts would include rice byproducts, the bran primarily. So a rice bran is characterized as the amount of fiber in the product. So there is a lot of adulteration and contamination, but this is the biggest byproduct year round. We also have wheat byproducts. We mix everything up to come up with wheat pollard. So wheat bran, wheat mids, wheat germ, all the byproducts of the flour milling industry is lumped into what we call wheat pollard. So that's a food byproduct coming out of starch. We have corn byproducts, where we have some wet and dry corn milling facilities. So we get byproducts from there, but as you understand, these byproducts are all byproducts primarily from grains, and they will have a lot of anti-nutritional factors and toxins as well, mycotoxins. So this limits the use of these byproducts. They become like filler materials. So if we're not sure, we manage the use of these byproducts based on stage of growth and level of contamination. So we have some quick test kits to measure some of these anti-nutritional products, because the Philippines is 7,600 islands. So there is not a lab close to these islands. So we have some simple test kits for detecting fiber, for detecting adulteration. We also use ELISA test kits for mycotoxin analysis. We also have in commercial feed mills and large commercial farms, aside from ELISA kits, we have NIRs available as well. So the problem really is the calibration of these unconventional and locally available byproducts. And some of the available byproducts are regional in location as well as seasonal in availability. So in the southern part of the Philippines, where there's no typhoons, because, you know, the Philippines is heavily hit by typhoons, 20, 30 typhoons come in every year. But the southern part, there are no typhoons. So it's a heavy producer of bananas for human consumption. So almost everything is for export. If it doesn't pass export quality, it's diverted to the feed industry.
I see.
And we use this banana meal for pigs, for chickens, for aqua, in various forms. Okay, so this is an example. We have also copra meal, which is a byproduct of the coconut oil industry. Palm kernel meal is also available. These are very difficult products to use. The consistency and reliability, especially because a lot of mycotoxins would be associated with this product. So, for example, in the breeder animal, we don't for large commercial farms, we don't use it because of mycotoxin issues.
So a lot of alternatives, but then there is the need to for some ongoing testing.
Yes, quality control is the key in for successful partial substitution of corn and soy in the diets, and that has made our industry at least alive. You know, we cannot export because our cost to produce is a lot higher than everybody else.
Some other topic I would like to ask you about is the topic of heat stress, right? Especially thinking about the lactating sow, but not only the lactating sow. And so I understand it's still very common to have open-sided barns in the region. And so I'd like to hear from you about your experiences and how do you counter act here on this issue of the heat stress?
Very good question. You know, everybody thinks that heat stress is just because of high temperature, but in a tropical country and in a country like the Philippines, where we're surrounded by seas and oceans, it's humidity. It's high humidity that really impacts on the animal to produce stress. So there's high temperature, and when it's raining, there's very high humidity. We reach up to 97% humidity sometimes. So the animal, especially the sow, doesn't want to eat. And if the sow doesn't want to eat, it doesn't produce milk, and those piglets scour, the body condition of the sow is deteriorating, and you know, you have poor quality piglets. So in an open-sided facility, there's really not much you can do except adjust your feeding management. So what we try to do is to feed more times in a day. Some farms can go up to 6 times feeding. And this feeding happens normally in the cooler parts of the day when the sow is not as stressed, you know, early morning, you know, midnight. We know labor is expensive, but in Philippines is third world, so labor is still manageable, so we can still do this. There's very limited automated feeding. But the big commercial farms to survive have shifted to CCS type housing. So they're in better shape. They have more control of their environment, but 70%, because it's in backyard, so we still have to manage it this way. So we rely on feeding management strategies in order to satisfy at least partially the nutrient requirements, especially of the sow.
And then before you talked about gut health, right? And so thinking about this heat stress problem, and then availability of products and everything, how do you maximize not only the meeting the nutritional requirements, but also boosting the sow's gut health so that you have a whole herd performance assured?
One thing is to feed the sow enough nutrients, a lactating sow. So we use the hyperprolific pigs as well. So we have Dan breeds, we have PIC and all the varieties available in the US and Europe. Unfortunately, when they come to the Philippines, the weather and the environmental conditions really challenge them. So we use more high energy diets And in summer, during the heat stress and in when it's hot and humid, we increase the use of oil, the proportion of oil versus carbohydrates, because oil has this metabolic effect. It's cooler to metabolize rather than using grains. But oil has been very expensive the past few years. So it also challenges the producer, okay? In open-sided houses, unfortunately, if you have a sow under heat stress, the average intake is around 4 to 4.5 kilos per day. And you know, that's really not enough.
That's not enough.
But in the commercial farms where we have CCS type environments, we can reach up to 7 to 9 kilograms of intake. And that's a huge difference when it comes to the health of the pigs and survival, and of course the condition of the sows, which is very important for us. It's by feeding management and nutritional strategies we try to calculate intakes and adjust intakes accordingly and feed accordingly based on behavior of the sow. Hopefully we won't feed her primarily when it's between 10 to 2 o'clock, 10 a.m. to 2 o'clock, because this is the hottest period. We'll probably feed them very early in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, and late in the evening. And some smaller portions during the day. So this is how we manage the requirements for the sows. And of course, you know, we try to help the gut system keep it healthy. By doing some things before they farrow, during the late gestation or even during the whole gestation period, we try to control gut health. Previously, when I was very young in the industry, all of these were antibiotics that they use, okay? Because the understanding of the gut health and the microbiome was really primitive at that point. So now a lot of, especially the bigger producers, understand this. And I'm really not sure how much reduction in antibiotics usage have we gone through. But in my practice, at least, we only use antibiotics for therapeutic purposes, not for growth promotion anymore.
Same here, this part of the world. And so it's bringing to this curiosity question, right? So you got your PhD training in the Western kind of school, right, in Georgia, and then been practicing for 40 years in the Philippines and Southeast Asia. How do you translate the Western nutrition science to the, say, the Eastern practical day to day?
Yeah, the experience in Georgia really helped me, especially on the technical and research side of the science, because being a consultant, you work with both big and small scale farmers, big commercial feed mills, large commercial feed mills. So you have to understand what is available and what you can use. Because I was trained, you know, if there is a raw material in it and we can put a value to its nutrient content, we can use it, okay? So the key really is evaluating these available, locally available materials to partially substitute maize and soy. So that's key in survival in the Philippines. Of course, there's some cultural and environmental factors which I think will be different in every country. When I go to Bangladesh, the Philippines is primarily Catholic, 80-85%. in Bangladesh, it's the reverse. 80-85% is Muslim. So cultural differences, religious differences would also have an impact on how you practice nutrition and farm management. And of course, at the end of the day, we want to balance nutrients and prevent a lot of wastage of nutrients. So we look at digestibility. And when you talk about digestibility, these byproducts would be very difficult to validate digestibility figures. And unfortunately, the Philippines, we don't have really a very technical research center that can manage doing all these digestibility coefficients for all the available local byproducts because it's expensive. And agriculture universities are usually government funded. So that limits the support of government in terms of evaluating all these nutrient or all these raw materials for their nutrient value for feeding animals.
You've got to learn by trial and error and measuring and taking notes and learning from experience,
yes,
right?
That,
applied science.
That's it. But the experience, really, the learnings in Georgia have helped a lot, you know, especially when we set up trials, trial protocols, and evaluate these raw materials. At least we have that experience and background. So this helps our clients, you know.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Vaccinova, formulate to your needs. Custom-made vaccines. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost pig health and performance. AB Vista, an innovative animal nutrition company offering intelligent solutions for the swine industry. The combination of innovative products, technical expertise, and cutting-edge services provide the ideal tools to drive pig production. To learn more about AB Vista tools, check abvista.com.
Well, it has been great, a great conversation that brings us to the what they call the famous three, right? Famous three questions we asked every guest here in the program, and those are going to be, the first one is, in your opinion, from your experience, what you have seen, what are the main characteristics of a great and successful professionals? What set them apart?
Yeah, I think the first one really is knowledge of science in whatever you do. For example, our industry is livestock production. It's science, you know. You have to have a strong foundation of the science of behavior of animals, anatomy, physiology, biochemistry, you know, basic. And if you did not learn this in school, then you'll have to brush up as you practice, because this is what you encounter in the field. The basis are really these basic sciences. So yeah, that's one. Second is, I think, the openness to learn. At my age, I'm 62. This is my 41st year in the industry. I continue to learn because science is very dynamic. The technology changes. And in order for my clients to evolve, we need to adopt technologies. We need to learn what the technologies are and adopt what is practical and doable under our conditions. So a lot of old people don't learn anymore, don't study because they think they know a lot. But it's different for me. So learning probably takes around 30% of my time. I travel a lot because I need to attend these conferences. You know, you pick up 10%, 15%, that adds up. And you validate maybe 50% of what you do with these scientific conferences. And that's where you improve your trade. Okay. So what else? You have to make your interpersonal skills, I think, is very important, because even if you're very good, if you cannot relate to your clients, then, you know, the consultancy is not effective. So learning to deal with people, and in consultancy, like I have more than 20 clients. So each one is a different person. It may be a person, it may be a company. They have their own organization. So I will only be effective if I can communicate and interact with my clients and their managers, of course, their key personnel that you work with day to day.
Thanks for sharing that wisdom. And well, the other question is, what's a swine-related resource? Could be a book, podcast, page, whatever, that you would like to recommend to the audience?
You know, as a nutritionist, we've read mostly of all the commercial books available. You know, Steve Leeson's book is like a Bible. You know, Smith's book was, when I was studying, was also another Bible. But, you know, one very practical resource are those books published out of Europe, you know, the Signal books. They're very practical. Piglet signals, you know, sow signals, you also have for poultry. You see this being, there's a, you know, a corner if you attend ESPN, sometimes, and maybe IPPE or even Pork Congress, you see there's a booth selling these types of books, and they're very practical. So for my clients who are not really trained as animal science people or veterinarians, don't have the degree, they have degrees in management, so everything is foreign to them. So I sometimes lend these books to them so that they can read and get familiarized with even just terminologies. It helps them a lot.
Oh, thanks. I'm going to check it out myself. Then the final question is, what's a non-swine-related book or resource would like to recommend?
When you get older, you think about your health, your longevity, and how to stay younger, to keep up with the game, you know. At 62, I'm not ready to retire yet. So there's this book. You know, this one was by Peter Diamandis. It's called The Longevity Handbook.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been reading this, and I told you a while ago, I started reading it. I read a lot, and then I stop because there's a lot of other things to do, and I put it down. And I haven't finished reading it, but it's very interesting, especially for my age. So you're a lot younger than I, Daniel. So it would be nice to read.
Yeah. Thank you for the tips and tricks. And I enjoyed the conversation, which is kind of about a story of marrying applied sciences and experience, right, in the real life, helping Asian swine producers on their swine health and productivity. So thank you for that. And that was about it for what we had planned for today. And for the public audience, I see, thank you for listening, and see you next time.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me over. I hope your listeners would learn something about this, and, you know, more people listening to you and learning the science and the practical things, you know. So thank you very much, and hope you the best.
Thank you. We'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.